This episode is brought to you by you. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to become a member today.
Welcome to The Grape Nation, your weekly journey. Our guest is Hervé Gestin. We'll talk to Hervé about Champagne and Leclerbriand. We'll taste a few Leclerbriands that Hervé was kind enough to bring to the table for our weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. Hervé Gestin is the chef du cave at Champagne Leclerbriand, overseeing all production since 2008. Hervé is a practitioner and expert in organic and biodynamic farming and is a forefather of bioenergetics, bringing the energy of nature to the finished wine. Was all that correct and accurate? Okay. All right, welcome to the Grape Nation, Hervé.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. There's a lot going on in New York. There's La Fête du Champagne, which is a festival of champagne growers that are in town pouring, and that's one of the reasons Hervé's here. So let's tell people a little about who you are. Tell me about your journey in life and wine that got you currently to Leclerbriand, you know, overseeing the whole production. There's a lot in between that.
Yes, you know, My wine life is very large and very old life because I was born between two barrels, you know.
Okay.
A long time ago, you know, 62 years ago, you know, because my grandfather and my father was wine merchant, you know. So I started to taste my first wine. I was 7 years old, you know, with my grandfather. And I've never been drunk, you know, during my life. So after my study at the University of Reims, I started to be enologist and chef de cave and head winemaker for Duval Leroy, you know. It was in 84. And from 84 to 2006, I spent 24 years to work for this company, you know, as a head winemaker.
That's a long time.
It's a very long time.
In any one place.
Yes.
In this
business. But a very interesting place because we did many, many things, many nice things during this period. And I've learned a lot, you know. I got a chance to be employed at 24 years old, you know. It was my first job after the university. And it was a very important job at that time, you know.
So you eventually leave there after 24 years.
Yes.
What do you do before you got to Leclerc?
Yes, I decided to create my own company, my own advice company. So I started to work everywhere in Europe. I started to work in Russia, in Italy, in Spain, in England, and of course, I advised at that time a lot of growers, you know, in Champagne. And we had the opportunity to, you know, I also was working for Leclerbriand, for the former president. And unfortunately, he passed away. He was very young. He was 60 years old, you know. And his four daughters decided to continue the activity. But in France, you have to pay huge taxes. So they were unable to finance the taxes, you know. So they decided to sell. And we were lucky enough to be able to buy the company. But in that time, the company was in very bad state because the finance was difficult. So we bought with an American family.
What year was that?
It was in beginning of 2012.
And how did you come upon the American family couple?
It's a pure hazard, you know. One of my friends was advocate, you know, and he asked me, I have an investor, you know, and he would like to invest in champagne business. So I had the possibility I knew that Leclerbriand was for sale, you know. So I answered, yes, I know a company for sale. So it's a pure hazard, you know.
So Leclerbriand, if you look at when you got there backwards. What's a little history?
Le Clairvoyant is a very old company. It has been created in 1872. It's a very old familial company, very important because in that time they own more or less 60 hectares of vineyard, which is a lot in Champagne region. Yes, very, very important. And so it was one of the pioneer of organic and biodynamic vine growing in Champagne,
because which was rare in those days.
Yes, because they started to work on organic around 1960, in that time only 5 or 6 growers were working with the organic approach, And so after that, after the organic, they moved toward biodynamic approach around maybe in beginning of the 80s, So
who was the influence to move in that direction there?
Maybe it was Nicolas Joly,
Okay.
Nicolas Joly is a very famous vine grower located in Val-de-Loire, He is famous in the world, and I think he spent several years working in the United States,
Right. Were you working with organics or biodynamics, or when you got to Leclerc, that's when things really, focused towards that?
Yes, for me the idea, it's not difficult to make a wine sparkling, it's very easy, but it's not the purpose because it's not my interest, From I was very young, I always been convinced that we had to be close to the nature, So I started to be interested by the biodynamic approach in 95, around 95 at Duval-de-Loire. So I started some very huge experimentation at that time, and I got some very nice results. So I decided to push and to develop my understanding of biodynamic, So I have advised many people in Champagne.
When you left?
Yes, Duval-de-Loire.
Consulted in that area.
Yes, exactly. So
around the world, right?
Yes, around the world, in Spain, in Italy, in England, in Russia, and of course in Champagne, yes.
So were there not that many people that were experts at it in those days?
No, it's very difficult because you need to experiment by yourself, because you can't find any book on the subject. You can find many books written on the agriculture in general, and the vine growing in general, but on the winemaking, nothing. It's impossible to find in the world a book on biodynamy applied to the winemaking. So we have to improve, we have to develop, we have to experiment, we have to find everything. So it's a long way.
So it wasn't a coincidence that the American couple, when they bought Leclerc, brought you in, because the sensibilities pre-existed towards organics and biodynamics.
Yes.
And
yes.
You were one of the practitioners.
Yes. It was a huge
sense. So that
was
a perfect match.
Yes, exactly.
Responsible, sustainable viticulture and winemaking are so important now to the consumer and obviously the environment. Champagne as a region is so late towards a commitment to organics and biodynamics. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I think the average production of organic in Champagne is around between 3 and 5% of the total production. Many people has two activities, many growers has two activities. There are salary in big names, for big names, and the during the weekend they care their vineyard, So they have no time to improve their knowledge about wine, about vine.
It's not a priority.
No, it's not a priority. And the second point is the average size of the vineyard is very small. The average size for a single vineyard is maybe 0.2 hectares, which is very small to apply the principle of biodynamy, because your neighbor continue to spray pesticides,
Right next door.
Yes, exactly.
As hard as you try, it's blowing in the wind, literally,
yes, so
right?
This is the reason why some people decided not to go that direction, because of this problem, Maybe it's the reason, the number one. And maybe the third reason is the difficulty with the climate,
So climate?
Yes.
Because of what? Wet? Mildew?
Yes. Mildew is very important. The pressure for the mildew is very important in our region, And when you decide to eliminate pesticides, you have to be very present in your vineyard, And you have to be there when the rain is there, It's impossible to wait more than 24 hours to care your vine. So it's you have to be present, and if you are salary in a company, you can't be present,
Right.
So
And you had mentioned earlier that a lot of the champagne houses just don't make it a priority to be out in the field or whatever.
Yes.
So they can't manage the weather.
Yes.
What do you think it's going to take to change things?
The climate is changing over the...
Let's talk about that separately. But what is it going to take for the wine houses, wine growers to understand that organics and even biodynamics is a direction they have to think about? Is it time or it may never happen?
No, I think it's a question of time, you know, because when we started to be interested by biodynamy, we only had less than 1%.
Right.
And now we are, the organic production represent more or less 3 to 5%, you know, so it develops very slowly, but it will continue.
Do you see it continuing?
Yes, of course. And I'm confident for the future. I think in the next 10 years we will be 10%.
Okay.
Yes, at least 10%, you know.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's hope.
Yes.
You say biodynamic resonance applies not only to the cultivation of vines, but also to the making of
yes.
the wine, which really says the field, you know, and the making of the wine. While I have you here, because you really are the expert, give me your explanation so people understand organic and biodynamic viticulture. Keep it simple. I mean, I've asked guests over and over. I will knock this into my listeners' heads, but there's nobody more credible than you to answer.
So now, you know, as I explained to you, you can find many books on the subject, you know, on the
right.
first subject, but on the winemaking, because, you know, the philosopher Steiner didn't work at all on the winemaking. He only spent several hours to work on the vine, and he considered wine was not very interesting for a human being, you know, because he was living during the Industrial Revolution in Europe, and that time, the wine industrial had to produce a lot of wine to supply the workers because their life was very difficult. So to forget that the difficulty of the life, of the daily life, they had to drink a lot of wine, you know.
Right.
So Steiner observed a lot of violence between the father.
Steiner is the father of biodynamics.
Yes.
Rudolf Steiner.
Yes, exactly. So he observed a lot of violence between the father and the son, between the father and the mother, you know, because of the wine, you know, because of the violence, you know. So he couldn't accept this, but he didn't understand. He didn't understand the real potential and the real interest of the wine, you know, because he was in front of him. He only had industrial wine, so it's very different, you know. It's really very different, you know. We don't work at all in this direction, of course.
Right. So, but tell me, what is biodynamic viticulture?
So,
first organic and then biodynamic.
Yes, you know, organic is you eliminate what is all the synthetic production. You eliminate pesticides. You eliminate and you replace by natural substances. You know, that's all. You know, biodynamic. You take into consideration the location of the vineyard in the world. You know. And you consider the vineyard is under the influence of many parameters. Some are
moon, planets.
Yes, exactly. Very, very different influences. So you have to find the main influences in function of the season, in function of the location of your vine, in function of many, many different parameters. So it's a very large approach of the agriculture. You know, organic, you replace chemie by natural substances. And biodynamic, you try to understand and you try to replace the vineyard in a sort of global environment. You know, it's very different approach,
right.
You know.
Is maintaining a biodynamic vineyard, is it difficult? I know it's a commitment, but now, is it a hard thing to do, or once you make the commitment, it's...
No, it's of course, you have to spend time to care your vineyard, because it's you have to be present, you know. You have to be present, but when you start, the two, three first years are very difficult, because you have to change your mind, you know.
Right.
You have to change
the transition.
Yes, exactly. So it's not at all the same approach, the same philosophy, so you have to change anything. But after 2-3 years, it's okay, because you start to understand what the nature is. You start to understand that the vegetable is not only a dead vegetable, it's a sort of living system. And you have to take into consideration that the human being is also, of course, a living system. And the idea is to put into resonance the human being with the vineyard and with the universe. You know, it's the key point, you know.
That's the answer I was looking for. Now, you said this twice, and I want to get into it a little. So the practice of organics and biodynamics in the vineyard is one thing. How does that carry over into the cellar? Because you could really be an organic or biodynamic grower, and you could screw it up in the cellar. So to continue with the commitment, what are the practices in the cellar?
In the cellar, it's the practice are you have to experiment because, as I told you, you can't find anything in the book, you know. So I will tell you an example, very, very interesting example. Last year, during summertime, you observe everywhere in the world the proximity of the planet Mars. The planet Mars at the end of August was close to our planet at 57 million kilometers instead of 2,000 to 4,000 million kilometers.
And it's like half.
Yes. And so the yeast, and the activity of the yeast during the first fermentation is controlled by the activity of the moon and by the activity of the sun. But the bacteriums are controlled by the activity of March, of the planet March. So it means that during this last summertime, the bacterium receive a growth signal very early in the season. In general, this signal arrived at the beginning of spring, you know. And so we observe very, 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 very difficult phenomenons because the bacterium started to work in the same time than the yeast, you know, on residual sugar. So a lot of people all around the world has lost a part of their production because of the increase of acetic acid.
So the cycles of the sun and the moon are predictable. Did you know that Mars was going to be at its closest point last year?
Yes, yes, of course.
Manage it in the cellar.
Yes, the previous time it was in 2003. You know, in 2003, Mars was at 55 million kilometers. You know, and so we had to solve the problem. One thing is to know the origin of the problem. One thing is to solve the problem. So I received many calls during the last fermentation in 18. Hervé, do you understand what happened? Because our fermentation are all wrong, the acetic acid increases, so what could we do? So the idea was very simple. It was just enough to bring to the juice some piece of chalk coming from our region, because chalk is also in connection with the moon, you know. So if you balance, if you increase the influence of the juice by the moon, you know, it's okay, you save the problem, you solve the problem.
So just by the addition of chalk?
Yes, just by some small quantity of chalk, that's enough.
A tiny quantity,
yes,
it sounds like.
That's enough. What is important, it's not the quantity, it's the information brought, transmitted by chalk, you know.
That's amazing. What is bioenergetics? In my research, you know, I see everywhere you are the forefather of bioenergetics. What is it and how do we apply it to wine? How do you apply it to wine?
What I consider now, you know, everything is, when you apply the biodynamic approach, you consider everything is a sort of living system. So a living system, we work with bacteriums, we work with yeast, you know. So we work with human being, you know, bringing their best to the wine, you know. So the energy is the consequence of the life, you know. So if you work with life, you will find life everywhere. You will find life in your grapes, you will find life in your wine, you will find life in juice. So we try to work with this life, and to describe this life we use the word energy, you know, because to control the quantity of life in a system, you measure the energy of the system. That's enough, you know. If the energy is high, no problem. You will avoid many diseases. If the energy is low, you will meet some huge problem, you know. So maybe it's
an answer. Why would the energy be low? Because if it's the vineyards, it hasn't been tended to properly.
Yes.
If you're committed to biodynamics, you don't keep it up or organic.
Yes. For instance, you know, we measure some the energy using some units. We use the Bovi unit, B-O-V-I unit, you know, and the maximum for a conventional wine is 12,000. The maximum for an organic wine is 17,000, and the maximum for a biodynamic wine is 30,000. But in our wine now today, because of what we do in the cellar, we have more than 100,000 units. So wow. you can imagine the consequence on the human being, you know.
That's amazing. Nicole, I think we should open a bottle of champagne and drink a little while we're talking. I wanted to ask you now about climate change. It's always been an issue, but it seems in the forefront now, and it's changing the way things are. I mean, England has a sparkling market, I think, because of some kind of climate change.
Yes.
But tell me what effect climate change primarily is having on Champagne.
Yes, you know, I was...
The region, the wine, the grape, you know, everything.
Yes, so I was born on the 14th of September. You know, when I was 24, I feast my birthday several days before the beginning of the harvest time. When I'm at the middle of my professional life, I feast my birthday in the middle of harvest time. And now I feast my birthday before, after.
There's a great way to measure it, right?
Yes. So we have saved or lost, I don't know what we have to say, you know, 5 weeks in more than 35 years, you know.
Wow.
It's enormous. You can't imagine how enormous it is, you know. So the consequences are we have a higher level of alcohol, of sugar. 35 years ago, we have an average potential of 9.5. And today we have an average potential of 11, you know. So we have saved 1.5 in terms of alcohol potential. It means 25 grams of sugar more in the juice in comparison of what we had 25, 30 years ago, you know. So we have a pressure, we have a disease pressure much higher, you know.
So how do you manage that?
It's very difficult. We use some plants, we use some prophylaxis, you know. We take care of the leaves, you know. We make aeration of the grapes, you know. We use essential oil. We use plants. So we use different substances, natural substances, to care the problem, you know. But it's always very difficult. It's always very difficult. It's a huge challenge.
And there has to be a shift for everything, right? When you plant, when you harvest.
It's difficult because we have to adapt to a new situation, you know. We have to adapt to a new situation. And sometimes it's very difficult to appreciate the consequences, you know. You take some decision, but without any experience of the new situation, you know. And so, but in the same time, it permits to produce a different wine, you know.
Right.
Yes. So it's not for the moment, it's not a huge problem, except the pressure of the different fungus, you know. But it's not a real problem for the moment because we are able to manage.
So you talked about during the course of your adult life and working,
yes,
you know, a 5-year period. Was that gradual or did it get worse, let's say, in the last 5-10 years?
No, I think it's gradual, you know.
We
have got some problem. We have got some huge problem in 2003, you know. And from, I think the changing arrived in 1990, you know.
All right, we popped open a bottle of wine. Let's talk about it for a second. What are we drinking?
So now we opened a bowl of vintage 13, you know. 13 was a very nice vintage in Champagne, a sort of old-style vintage, you know. With a late harvest, we started to harvest on the 24, 25 of September, which is now a bit late, you know, in comparison of what we did this year. This year we started the end of August, you know. So it's more traditional years. 13 is more traditional years. With a nice balance between the sugar and the acidity, you know, a good presence of fruit and a very smooth, very silky texture. So it's very pleasant, you know. And in that case, we have a majority of Pinot Noir in this wine, you know.
So what is the blend?
The blend is 70% Pinot Noir, 50% Chardonnay and 50% Meunier. And we didn't add anything. We didn't add any sugar. So it's a
brut de brut. No dosage.
No dosage. Because we make a long aging on the lees, you know.
Right.
We let 10 months the wine aging on the lees. So it has a natural silky texture, you know. So we don't have to add sugar.
Would you say your champagnes, your wines, are gastronomic champagnes? I mean, are these good?
We have plenty of different cuvées, you know. We produce now more or less the 14 different cuvées.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second.
Yes, so it means that we have...
You have a choice
exactly
to match and
yes,
pair.
Yes.
I want to get specific in a few minutes, in really a minute or two. But the last thing I wanted to ask you before we talk specifically about Leclerc, I think we talked about most of them, but what changes have you seen in Champaign, you know, in your tenure, the whole totality, the last 5 years, the last 10 years? I mean, are there things that come to mind?
We can say now the interest for nature is more and more present among the young generation, you know. So this is the main point, you know.
Consumer and
yes,
grower.
Yes, consumer and growers. So for me, it's a very good thing, you know, because you don't need wine to live, you know. Of course, the life will be sad, but you don't need wine to live. So if the growers want to continue to produce grapes, they have to respect the environment, you know. They have to respect the human being in front of their wine, you know. So now people understand, many people understand this situation. So for me, it's very interesting, because when I started to work on this subject 35 years ago, I was considered as a completely crazy, you know. And today, the people work in my direction. So for me, it's very, very interesting. You know, it's a sort of happiness for me. You know, so it's
most of the time the crazy guys turn out to be right, right? We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about Leclerc Brion and all the different ranges of champagnes, and we'll get into that specifically and how some of them are made. We're talking to Hervé Gestin from Champagne Leclerc Brion, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Grape Nation.
This episode is brought to you by you. Heritage Radio Network makes your favorite food podcasts, and now we need you to lend your voice to our community and show your support of food radio. Become a member today. HRN releases 35 weekly shows each week and is a globally respected voice in food media. But believe it or not, we're still a very small grassroots organization. HRN is powered by a small but mighty staff of 4 people and HRN's incredible hosts who volunteer their time to bring you the best food podcasts out there. Our hosts are experts in their field, whether it's food writing, mixology, culinary history, craft beer, LGBTQ issues, and so much more. And they're committed to making sure that the stories that matter to you keep coming each week. We believe that a thoughtful, committed group can change the world. So join us. Add your voice and support HRN by making a donation of any amount. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
We're back with my guest, Hervé Gestin from Leclerc Brion. Hervé, I want to talk to you about the Champagne House now. You make, I think you said, 14 cuvées, including some interesting projects, which we'll save towards the end to talk about. But let's talk about the different champagnes. I guess the first lead question would be, is there a flagship champagne? Is there one that you make more bottles than the other? I know some are more limited. You know, walk me through. I know you have 3 different ranges. You have a classic range. You have a single vineyard.
Yes, exactly.
Which is something not everyone was doing, and specialty wines.
Yes, exactly.
So let's talk about them.
Yes, you know that Leclerc Brion was very famous for the single vineyard. They were the first in Champagne region to create some single vineyard and to produce single vineyards coming from very nice plot, you know, located in general along the Marne River Valley. So
explain what a single vineyard champagne is.
So a single vineyard champagne is the fruit of a very small plot of vineyard, you know. We don't make any assemblage. Champagne region is considered as the leader in the world for the assemblage. In general, when you drink champagne, it's a blend. It's a blend of many, many different origin of grapes, you know. Maybe you can find 100 different components in an assemblage. So it's a long way. It's the DNA of Champagne region, you know.
Right.
But with the global,
you create a house style that way, a consistency.
Yes, yes, exactly. So it's the reason why you have to be very careful when you prepare your bridge. But in the same time, with the global warming, now more and more, we are able to to work in our region as they work in Burgundy, you know. So you know that in Burgundy, they produce a single vineyard with a very, very small plot of vineyard. So it, because of the climate, is very, very interesting for them. It's the same more or less now in Champagne region. So we have selected in our 15 hectares, because we have 15 hectares of vineyard, we have selected very interesting single vineyard. And we try to make a first years of experimentation. We make a very different wine making. And after this year, if the result is okay, we continue and we start to produce a new single vineyard. It's very interesting because it gives a sort of photography or of idea of what the terroir is in this single vineyard. And the soil could be very different. The orientation could be very different. The altitude could be very different. Of course, we are the maximum altitude in Champagne is 300 meters. So it's rather, but it's interesting to work.
So tell me specifically about the three single vineyards.
So we have
and the differences, soil.
Yes, exactly.
Character.
Yes, we have the famous one is La Croisette. La Croisette is a pure Chardonnay located close the winery, located in Épernay. It's a very old vineyard. It's a 40 years old vineyard which never seen any pesticide from the plantation. So this wine is very intelligent. We can say that this wine is very intelligent and very sensible to the presence of human being. And it's very interesting because we use different components. We use oak barrels, we use terracotta, we use glass, we use different
Stainless
steel also. And so we make the assemblage with the different components. The terracotta will bring the connection to the telluric activity. The oak will make the connection between cosmic and telluric. So it's very interesting to make the assemblage with the different system.
What is typical at other champagne houses? Do they use one vessel or do they use multiple vessels?
The majority of the people in Champagne use stainless steel.
They do?
Yes. And the grower,
so the fact that you're using different vessels, different characters.
Yes, exactly. You know, and the growers use more and more oak barrels, you know. But the problem of oak barrels for us is also the impact on the ecology, you know, because when you cut a tree, and a 150 or 200 years old tree, it's not neutral. So this is the reason why we try new system as a terracotta or glass system, you know. So this is the first single vineyard, but we have a different other vineyard. We have another one, which is called Les Basses Prières. It's a single vineyard located under the Abbey of Auvillers, you know, where the famous Dom Pérignon was living, you know. And we have another one. It's a very small clos. It's a very unique clos. It's also a pure Chardonnay. And the name of the clos is Le Clos des Trois Clochers. I don't know the translation in English of clocher. You know, it's the bell on the church, you know.
Ah.
You know, you see the highest point of the church. Inside you have the bell, you know. We call in French clocher, you know.
So and it's a type of bell.
Yes. And from the vineyard, we see from the center of the vineyard, we have the view on three different churches. And among those churches, we have the Cathedral of Reims, you know.
Ah.
So we call this place the Clos des Trois Clochers. And we work on many, many different
so
vineyards.
So these are much smaller production.
It's very small production.
I mean, what's the largest piece of property of the three?
The maximum of those single vineyards is 3,000 bottles for the world, you know.
Okay.
And the lower is 1,700. You know, so it's very, very small. But it's sort of laboratory for us, you know. It's
right. Mm-hmm. Right. Are there plans to bottle other single vineyards or?
Yes, we are working on three new single vineyards. One pure Pinot Noir coming from Grand Cru, from Mailly. Another one, a pure Chardonnay coming from Le Ménil-sur-Auger, and a Chardonnay coming from the region of Épernay, you know. So
that gives you the best way to understand the soil terroir.
Yes, exactly.
All right, then you make a classic range of five champagnes, bruts, and some vintage stuff, right?
Yes, exactly. We have we produce the regular brut, which is a very old wine for a brut, you know, because the wine in general is 40 months on the lees, you know, on the lees in bowl, you know. 10 months on the lees in stainless steel or in oak barrels, and more or less 10 months on the cork, you know. So it's a lot for a regular brut, you know. We have a rosé, of course, an assemblage, a rosé. You know, we have two possibilities to produce a rosé in Champagne. You have the assemblage of red wine and white wine. And the direct rosé, we call the skin contact or the maceration rosé. So we have both. We have the assemblage and the direct rosé. We also produce a premier cru coming from our vineyard. And we also produce a vintage. Now the actual vintage is 13.
The vintage available now on the market
yes,
is the 13.
Yes, it's 13, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you liked 13 as a vintage. You said yes. It was a classic vintage?
Yes, 13 is a very classic.
When you say classic define is, what classic is to you.
So it's the classic is you harvest at the end of of September, you know, after the 20th of September, which is now more or less rare, you know.
Right.
In general, we start to harvest in the end of August. So a long time ago, we were used to harvest in the 22, 24. So it was the case in 13. With a very good balance between the acidity and the sugar, you know, with the warming now, we have less and less acidity. So it's always difficult to manage the balance between the sugar and the acidity. So in that sense, it's a traditional vintage in Champagne.
Right.
Yeah.
You said before, you know, the vessels that you use for the wines, steel, terracotta, oak. You said one of the reasons you don't use oak is you don't want to cut down any more older trees. Is that part of it?
Yes, it's for us, it's a sort of interrogation, you know. It's not neutral to cut a very old tree, you know, even if you replace, you know, because it will take more than half.
When you say neutral, you mean like carbon neutral? Or
yes, and carbon neutral.
But what you're taking, you're not giving back.
Yes, not only the principle of the carbon neutral, but the fact you cut a sort of living system.
The whole environment
yes,
and
yes,
everything.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you make some specialty wines. Let's talk about them. There's one interesting project. I think it's called Abyss.
Yes.
Was that your idea?
Yes. To be honest, it has been inspired by my father, you know, because he met one day a very old friend of him working with a company specialized on the research of submarine different things, you know, and they planned to open a submarine cellar, you know. So he told me, would you be interested by this project? And I just said, give me 1 hour, you know, to think about. And after 10 minutes, I call him back. Yes, I'm interested. Because it's so nice project. This project is one of
them. So explain what it is.
Yes, the idea is to let the wine aging under the sea at 60 meters deep in a very dangerous place. You know, we let the bottle aging on the west coast of France, you know. Just on the last, near the last land before United States, because United States is located at 6,000 kilometers from the small island, you know.
Right.
And in this place, the Atlantic Ocean meets Channel Sea, you know. So we have a very, very violent current, you know. And so it means that you observe some vortex, you know, some very huge vortex. So it means that you have plenty of life in this region, you know. And the wine, which is a biodynamic wine made with the respect of life, age in the heart of the nature, you know. And this point is incredible because we don't let our wine aging in a building built by human being, but we let the wine aging in the heart of the nature, you know, in the sea.
And so is the barrel, the vessel?
No, in bottle, the bottle. We let the bottle, the bottle are already fermented.
In the bottle.
Yes.
So it's bottled.
Yes.
And then it's crated or whatever, and it's dropped or it's...
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So all the vibration and current and
yes.
energy.
Yes, exactly. And you know, what is important also in seawater, you have all the memory of our planet, you know, from the beginning. So you can imagine the permanent dynamization of this memory, you know. So it's okay.
Now, when did you start making this?
We start, the first time was 12. The first vintage was 12.
So when you've obviously opened and tasted it, I mean, what, did it fulfill an expectation? Did it have a nuance that you expected?
Yes, it's always a question. You know, when I measure the level of energy of the wine coming back from the sea, I had 30% more in comparison of the same bottle aging now sellers, you know. You can imagine. So it means that...
That is the Bovee?
Yes, exactly. Yes, exactly. Right. We have 30% more, which is enormous. You know, it's very important.
So everything you thought happened.
Yes,
the energy and activity.
Much more. Yes.
So is that? I mean, it's an unusual project, but a successful one.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
Does it become less of a novelty and more of an option, or it's just too hard and costly to, you know, age wine that way?
No, I think it's we will continue this experience.
This project.
But it's helped us to understand what happened in the nature, what happened, what could be the consequence of our wine. So it's very interesting in terms of result, in terms of what we have learned about the experience. You know, and we plan to work on many different projects. Yeah, we have a very new interesting project arriving in the next year. You know.
Okay, can you talk about it?
No, it's a bit too early,
okay,
but next
so
year
let's,
I will
let's
tell
wait
you more,
for
yes.
that, something to look forward yes. to. But any other specialty wines that you want to talk about?
Yes, now we developed the one without addition of any sulfites, you know. You know that we use, all the wine industry use sulfites to control the oxidation, to control the microorganisms, you know. And so in that case, this the last wine is made without any sulfites.
We're going to taste that.
Yes. So this is the direction of the company, you know. Because when you work with the...
The direction being that you want to get to all the...
Yes.
Wines
yes.
without sulfate.
Yes.
So you're starting
yes.
experimenting.
Yes, yes, exactly. And okay. now it's possible to buy. We produce 3 different cuvées without any sulfites now.
And are you happy with the product, the results?
Yes, the result is very interesting because when you taste a good wine or an excellent wine, it's sometimes a very beautiful picture, you know. And when you taste a good wine made without any sulfites, it's not a picture, it's a video, you know. It's very, very different.
Right.
And the wine is changing, the wine is living, the wine is following you. So it's a very special feeling, you know, about the wine.
So to that point, aging, shipping, all that is working out fine, right?
Yes, we are able now to have the view of the first wine. You know, there is no problem of oxidation. You know, because the idea is to consider the oxygen as a friend of the wine and not as an enemy.
Right.
You know, because
you manage it,
of course. So you have to arrange a discussion between the oxygen and the wine. That's all. It's what we try to do in biodynamy. We
right.
don't care. We don't fight. We never use the word fighting, you know, or killing. You know,
it's active, not reactive.
Exactly.
You're trying to
yes.
do the right thing or
yes.
get to the right
yes.
place versus
yes.
fixing the
yes.
problem.
Yes, exactly. So
right.
it's for us now. It's very simple, you know, now.
That's great. I have a couple more questions. Then I want to subject you to our wine list. And then I want to try the no sulfur wine. I mentioned this off air. Best temperature to serve wine and the best type of glass to enjoy it. People have different notions. They serve it too cold.
Yes.
They use those crappy old flutes. What's the best way to enjoy wine?
So I consider the best temperature is the cellar temperature. It means 12 degrees, you know.
Okay.
But the ideal is between 12 and 15, you know. And
so in Fahrenheit, that would probably be 56, 58. Does that sound right?
Yes, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
I think that's it.
Maybe.
That's cellar temperature.
Yes, exactly. But under 12 is under 12, you spoil the wine, you know.
Right.
And it's also possible to serve at 16 or 17. You know, our wine are able to be served at this temperature, especially on lunch or dinner time. You know,
right.
There is no problem. You know, as you would serve some Burgundy. You know,
and the best glass.
The best glass is today is a sort of still wine glass. You know, we don't continue to use flute. You know.
Why?
Because the flute is too narrow, you know. And with the flute, you can't let the wine giving its best, you know, in terms of aroma, in terms of development. So now we use more and more very large glasses as Burgundy, as you can find Burgundy, you know. So
the aromas come out.
Yes, but the wine develop, you know. The
more air can get
yes,
in.
Yes, exactly, yes.
Right, so a Burgundy, or this looks like a Chardonnay glass, is this okay?
Yes, it's okay, yes, okay. Of course, it's okay, yes.
Just a good wine glass.
Yes.
And the last thing is, you mentioned this a couple of times, and I want you to get specific. You know, we talked a lot about viticulture practices. You've said more than twice that there's really no book about in the cellar what to do. Now, I picked up somewhere, are you writing a book about this?
Yes.
Is it in the works? Is it a thought?
I just started several pages, you know.
That's it?
I will tell you a story. You know, I was traveling in Japan in 2013. So I told the people I met, I just started to write a book, you know. And last year, I go back to Japan, and all the people ask me, what about your book?
Are you committed to writing and finishing it?
No. It will take maybe 2 years to write a book, you know. But
all the materials.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Know where
yes,
you
yes,
go
yes.
With
I have all.
And there's really nothing like it.
No, it will be the first in the world, you know. So,
listen, you better start working a little more on the weekends and stop sitting around. You better finish this book soon, okay? I'm going to check back with you. In a year from now, you better be halfway done. And then in 2 years, I'd like to sit down with you again and talk about the book.
Yes, yes. So it's very important to transmit, you know, because what we do is very special. You know, we know that it's very difficult to understand some point, you know, and we have to explain. But what is important is, of course, the words are important, but what is important is the result, you know, because without any result, it's a joke to write something about.
But you have an active body of work of over, you know, 45 years.
Yes. So now it's the reason why it's possible for me, you know. I've produced more than 300 million bowls by my own, you know. So it's a lot, you know. So now it's possible for me to write many things, you know.
That would be great. We would love to see that. Mm-hmm. And we will check back with you, like I said. Hervé, we do a thing called the wine list. We ask all our guests to answer five questions. We ask everybody the same five questions.
Yes.
Don't dwell on them. Give me your best answers. The first question is, what are you drinking now? Not right now, but what are you trying, experimenting with? What's on your table? What's in the fridge? Are you shifting for the seasons?
No, in reality, I love the wine from Burgundy, you know.
So Burgundy.
Yes,
the
Burgundy
top of
wine.
The list.
Yes, but the problem is the price today. You know, it's very expensive.
So can you get around that? Do you drink Bourguignon? Do you?
No, I often drink Burgundy white, you know, Chardonnay from Burgundy, you know, and sometimes red Burgundy, you know. But the problem now, I decide to buy or generic, you know. It could be a village appellation. It could be a Premier Cru, you know. But Premier Cru is still okay. It's difficult to buy now Premier Cru, and I like very much also the Nord Côte du Rhône, you know, Côte Rôti or Hermitage, you know, or Condrieu. I like.
Do you have any favorite makers?
Yes, Vernet, of course. Vernet for Condrieu, you know.
Sure.
Yes, Vernet for Condrieu. And also Guigalle is doing well, you know, with the normal, the Condrieu from Guigalle is very well made, you know, and the value is very interesting, you know.
Yes.
Yes.
Good value. There.
Yes, good value, yes.
What about reds from there?
The reds, I have many reds, but Guigalle is doing well.
Again.
Yes, again.
The whole.
You know, yes, the Orient, yes. The value is very interesting, yes.
I agree with you. Do you have a favorite wine and food pairing? Not something you eat every night or even every month, but is there something that's just, to you,
yes,
such a good pairing?
Yes, what I like is an old Chardonnay, old still Chardonnay, or maybe sparkling Chardonnay with a turbot, you know, just grill, you know.
Just a simple grilled turbot
yes.
With a aged Chardonnay.
Yes, exactly.
Or even a little sparkle.
Yes, exactly.
It's just, it goes
very
well
simple,
together.
Very simple, very, very, very interesting fish, you know, but very simple cooking, yeah.
That's perfect. a lot of the people we talk to are based out of New York or spend a lot of time in New York. So I ask them their favorite wine restaurant and or bar. But I think with you, if somebody is going to Champaign and they want to go into a good restaurant or bar where there's great attention towards the wine and the service is good, can you recommend a place or two?
In Champagne region?
Yes.
In Champagne region, we have plenty of nice restaurants. You know, we have, I think we have 9 stars Michelin. You know, you can imagine on a very short area, you know. So one of the best ones, you know, it's the new one. It's the Royal Champagne, you know. The Royal Champagne. It's a
Royal
new
Champagne?
Yes. The Royal Champagne is very interesting because
isn't there a connection?
Yes, exactly. But because of the location, one of the ideas is the location. You know, the location is extraordinary. You know, you have the view on
Apple. So it's a beautiful spot.
Yes, very beautiful spot.
Great food.
Yes, great food.
And great wine service.
Yes. And you have another one which is also very nice. It's you have two other wines. You have Les Crières. Les Crières, which is a 2-star Michelin in Reims, a very, very nice sale, a very nice food. And you have another one, it's L'Allemand, you know, L'Allemand, L'Auberge Champenoise, you know, which is a 3-star Michelin, you know. And so it's Arnaud L'Allemand, you know, the chef and the owner, you know.
Sure.
But you have plenty of different small restaurants, small
bistro.
What
about just like a wine bar? Is there a...
We don't have any wine bar.
Not
yes, we have a very nice wine bar. It's a sort of wine where you can buy your... It's a bar where you can buy your bottle, you know. It's
right.
Le Bon Manger. Le Bon Manger is a very, very interesting, very small restaurant, you know, in the city center of Reims, you know, and the people are very, very, very crazy. They have a very special wine, you know, coming from everywhere, some natural wine, some very interesting wine. So it's a very lovely place, you know.
Those are all good choices. Fourth question, favorite all-time wine? When I asked this question, the expectation was to get an answer of the rarest, most sought-after, expensive wine. I've said it's morphed to the wine that has become important to you or represented a moment or an experience.
Yes.
So what's a wine that's important to you?
Yes, I remember during Christmas time a long time ago, we were with the family and around the table, you know, on the 24th. And my grandmother, my grandmother was born in 1900, you know. And we had a table in 1899 or 1898. It was Léoville Lascaz from 1898, you know.
You had an 1898 Léoville Lascaz.
Yes. And my mother was
when
born.
When was this? How long ago?
It was maybe 25 years ago, you know.
And how did it show?
It was all the people were so impressed, you know, to see my grandmother and the bowl, more or less the same age than my grandmother, you know, and the wine was, my grandmother was still in very good health, you know, and the wine was still very nice, very young, very fresh, you know, with a lot of things to tell you, you know. So it was a real, very, very unusual experience. So this is a very strong souvenir.
You know, I told you I asked the same questions to all my guests. That may be the oldest wine as far as an answer ever. That's a great one, too.
Yes.
And they still make terrific wines, for sure.
Yes.
What do you think the best wine values are? If you had to point somebody to a red or a white, you know, and they wanted to spend 15, 20 American dollars, somewhere around there, what comes to mind? When you think of a white, when you think of a red.
We have plenty of very nice wine in the south of France, you know. In the Languedoc, we have a very, very good value. You can find, in France, you can find a great wine for 10 euros, 10, 12
right.
euro, you know. And I guess in the United States, you will find under 20 euro, you know. And so,
those wines.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
You don't
and
want to buy an American $10 wine.
Yes, maybe $20. You
right.
know? But it's for
so
me.
So wines from the Languedoc.
Yes, you can find very, very nice one for a very good price. And another region which is also very interesting is the Val de Loire. More and more the Val de Loire. You know, you find now
what's coming out of the Val de Loire
because you have a new generation of growers coming. You know, arriving. You know, so they decide to leave the cooperative and to produce their own wine. You know, and now they are very passionate by the winemaking, you know, so they produce good wine, excellent wine at a very reasonable price. And you have the south of Burgundy, you know, what we call Côte Chalonnaise, you know, with Rouilly, with Mercure, you know.
Yes.
And the value in general is outstanding.
Those are the Burgundies
yes,
that we
yes,
can drink.
Yes, exactly, yeah, exactly.
There's some good makers
yes,
there.
exactly.
Those are good answers. You know, you brought up a good point, and we could probably do a whole show on it. There's definitely a generational change in wine in general, certainly in Europe and
yes.
France. You know, a lot of the wineries, champagne houses, they're being taken over.
Yes.
You know, by the younger generations. Burgundy, we're seeing that a lot. It's very interesting, and good things are coming out of it. All right, good job on the wine list. Thank you for all those. I didn't mention, but we post all your answers on our social media.
Really?
So that everyone can see what Hervé recommends and all that. We end the show with a segment called the Weekly Wine Sip. Every week we taste a different wine on air. For our Weekly Wine Sip this week, we're going to taste our second Le Clair-Briand. And Hervé, tell us what we're going to be tasting.
So the second wine will be the Pure Cramant. Cramant is a very famous village. It's a Grand Cru from Côte des Blancs. Côte des Blancs is the region, the famous region where Chardonnay is planted in Champagne, you know. It's a 100% Chardonnay region, only Grand Cru, you know. And Cramant is one of the towns, you know. And this one comes from harvest 12. Yes, from harvest 13. Yes, from harvest 13. And this one is very interesting because it's made without anything, without any sugar, no dosage at all, made without any sulfites. And it's 100% oak barrel fermented, you know. So it's very, very interesting, very, very
when
interesting.
When you say barrel fermented, what do you mean?
It means that the wine has spent 10 months in barrels, you
okay.
know, in oak barrels. And
so the treatment is all oak on this or different? It spent time, 10 months in just oak?
No, yes, of course,
okay.
yes. We let on the lees, you know. We don't make any soutirage from the fermentation to the bottling, you know. And so the wine is very rich, you know, and plenty of very, very rich in terms of energy.
All right, let's go through all the descriptors. So the color is a beautiful pale yellow,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Beautiful color.
Yes.
Very delicate bubbles, right?
Yes, exactly, yes.
It's not, you know, bubbling over.
Yes.
It's very, you know,
yes.
elegant little bubbles.
Yes.
Tell me what you get on the nose.
So in the nose, you have plenty of different capricity. You have, of course, the presence of oak, the presence of vanilla, you know. Vanilla.
Not overpowering, though.
Yes.
Complimentary.
Yes, yes. You have hazelnut. You have hazelnut. You can find hazelnut.
A little nuttiness.
Dry fruit in general. You can find some white flowers, some exotic fruit also. You know, you can find some mango. You can find
yes.
mango.
An exotic or tropical fruit. Yep.
Yes, you can find also some aromas coming from autolysis. You know,
which is the
autolysis is the degradation of the yeast in the bowl during the aging on the lees. You know,
what so, typically does that smell like?
It's grilled bread, coffee. You know, in
right.
that case, it's grilled bread. You know,
right.
Yes.
Let's talk about mouthfeel. You know, champagnes vary. Some are rich, some are opulent, some are a little thinner. Where do you put this as mouthfeel?
This one is very silky. You know, the texture is so rich, you know. There is no sugar, but it's so powerful. It's so rich, you know. It's as you have, it's as the one was solid, you know.
Yes.
It has plenty of structure, you know. It's full of complexity, so it's an incredible wine.
So you said there's no sugar. Does adding sugar do anything to the mouthfeel? Does it make it richer or fuller?
Yes, exactly.
It's a good thing to have a rich wine without
yes.
sugar. And
yes,
everything
yes,
else is working
yes, yes.
well then.
And it's the difficulty. The difficulty is this
right.
one, yeah.
Now let's talk about the palate. The descriptors you gave me on the nose, do any of them translate to the palate?
Yes, in the palate, it's much more powerful, you know. It gives a sort of a very deep structure, very deep connection to the soil, you know. There is a sort of, it's a sort of fire, you know. There are plenty of different aromas. There are plenty of different sensation on the palate, you know. The silk, the presence of the freshness. You know, it's plenty of different interesting quality. But in general, you know, when I describe the wine, I avoid to cut the wine in different parts. You know.
Yeah.
And more, I just let the people trying to understand what is their feeling when they taste the wine. So I advise them to taste the wine with their emotion, you know.
Right.
And so
that's the way to do it.
Yes.
Champagne pretty much pairs well with a lot of foods.
More and more.
From popcorn to pizza to fried chicken to the obvious things, oysters. What's a good pairing for this particular, the Blanc de Blanc Grand Blanc? The
Malaise. Maybe it could be sushi, you know.
Sushi?
Sushi, yes.
So could this be is sushi. A great bottle for
yes,
sushi.
Yes, 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 yes.
All right, anything else?
Sushi or many different things. Of course, on Asiatic food, it could be very interesting on Asiatic food, you know.
Yes.
Of course,
it
of
could
course.
Hold up to yes, the, yes, the yes. spice and
yes,
all the
yes,
different
exactly,
flavors and
exactly,
everything.
Exactly, exactly, yes.
So this is the Le Clair Briand Blanc de Blanc, Grand Blanc, Millésime. How do you pronounce that?
Grand Blanc, Millésime.
Millésime, 2013, Brut Zero, no sugar added.
No sulfites. Huh?
All right, Hervé, I told you that an hour would go by quickly. We have to wrap the show up. Let me do a quick wrap-up. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening, or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Follow us on Facebook, at The Grape Nation, on Instagram, at SBenRuby, on Twitter, at BenRuby. I know that's confusing. But you can always use the hashtag, The Grape Nation. As I mentioned before, we'll post Hervé's wine list. We'll give you some great answers that he gave you. And I will list our weekly wine sip and the other wine that we tasted on our social media sites. Hervé, where can we find Champagne Le Clair Briand? Social media website.
Yes, and in a very very nice store. You can find the address at Winebow. You know.
Okay.
Winebow is the distributor in the United States.
So
you
if
know?
You go to Winebow, there's a section which I've been to on Le Clair Briand. Do you have social media sites for the?
Yes, we have a website, Champagne Le Clair Briand. Yes.
Okay, so it's Champagne Le Clair Briand.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. L E C. L-E-R-C, Le Clair Briand, B-R-I-A-N-T. So if you go, make sure that you have the proper spelling. And are you on Instagram or?
Yes, we also have Instagram, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I will post where that is. So you can follow them on Instagram. I'll tell you where you can go. And you can also go to the Winebow site or you can go to Champagne Le Clair Briand. Hervé, can't thank you enough for sitting down. I know during a busy week, La Fête de Champagne, and I know you're doing a lot of business. I want to thank our engineer, Jeet, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation.
The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.